Hi, my name is Allison Mead, and welcome to LAFPI's podcast series. The Los Angeles Female Playwrights Initiative is dedicated to encouraging and promoting the work of female playwrights, and today I'm going to be speaking with Susan Angelo, who is directing My Name is Rachel Corey at Theatricum Botanicum through September 22nd. Susan has directed countless Shakespeare plays, and as a longtime member of Theatricum Botanicum's company, has performed many of Shakespeare's most memorable female roles. She's also performed at New York's Signature Theater, the Blue Heron, and the Workshop Theater, as well as the Pittsburgh Public, Indiana Rep, Syracuse Stage, American Players Theater, William Inge Theater, the Shakespeare Theater in Washington, D.C., West Coast Jewish Theater, the Odyssey Theater in L.A., and A Noise Within. So thanks so much for being with me today, Susan.
Thanks, Allison.
For those who may not be familiar with My Name is Rachel Corey, could you give them a brief idea of the storyline and how the play originally came together?
Well, the play is based on a series of journal entries and poems and emails and letters that Rachel Corey wrote. She was a young girl who kind of came into the spotlight when she was 23. She had been in Gaza working with a peace group called the International Solidarity Movement, and they were there protesting the demolition of homes in Palestine. And she had put herself in harm's way of a bulldozer. They're physically, protecting the homes, and she was killed by that bulldozer, and that sort of shot her into the limelight and obviously into a lot of controversy about the Middle East conflict between the Israelis and the Palestinians. So Alan Rickman, the actor, the English actor, and Catherine Viner took the series of her emails and letters and combed through, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of entries and compiled this into a piece, My Name is Rachel Corey. They presented it in England. It was very well received there. And then there was a production slated back in New York. I believe it was 2006. I was actually living there then. And there was so much controversy at that time. Because really what was going on, and the production was pulled. It was later done at a different theater in New York. I didn't really follow that story very closely at the time, but I remember thinking, well, that's interesting. It's certainly a hot topic issue, and it touches a lot of nerves, incites a lot of anger, and, justifiable, difficult feelings. But on the other hand, I thought, to me, theater is not just entertainment, but it's an opportunity to put up opposing viewpoints and really to have discussion in an educational format about these issues. So I thought, oh, isn't it sad that the theater has taken that stand? So years later then, our artistic director asked me if I would direct it here.
Well, that's interesting because that kind of bleeds directly into my next question, which is that the idea of struggling, so you mentioned struggle as being part of good theater, and I completely agree. The idea of struggling with your place in the world, for her, emerges as one of the play's most poignant themes. So I wondered how that had affected your life and how it colored your decision-making process on this project.
Well, it's really interesting. I mean, I think, like I said, this play and the issue that it touches on is a real hot topic, and there's a lot of controversy surrounding it. But I didn't initially see it as a political story. I saw it as a young woman. She was a young writer. She wanted to see the world. She wanted to explore the world beyond her town in Olympia, Washington, where she was raised, so that she could be a writer. She found herself doing more and more community activism in her hometown, an organization there. I think that she, from what I've read from all of her other journals, I think she just felt a growing responsibility to be socially involved and engaged in the world around her in a way that she thought other people of her generation were not. She saw her peers preoccupied with consumerism, partying, actually defeated her generation by feeling powerless in the world, not socially engaged, and also not really having an appreciation of the liberties that we have here and that we take for granted, the privileges that we have here. So with that sort of brewing in her young developing persona, she was invited to Gaza by this friend who was working with the ISM. And, I think that once she was there, she was simply able to put a human face on Palestinians who up until this point had really been statistics in news reports. You know, she lived with the family. She played with their kids. She ate with them. She talks about watching bad American movies with them. She bonded with them. And, of course, the organization was assisting in protecting their homes and their water supply. But I think that, you know, she was probably naive. She was probably not fully educated as she could have been on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I do think she would have continued to educate herself had she lived. And I kept thinking, you know, if she had gone somewhere else, Somalia, if she had lived with an Israeli family, she would have been seeking out and sensing the same sort of injustices. Mm-hmm. So to me, when I read the play, I thought, it's not so much about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. That's the entry point because that was her point of view. But it's about a bigger issue of valuing human life. Are we willing to stand up and speak out in what we might see as injustices? Mm-hmm. So I saw it ultimately it was a story of a young girl who wanted peace. You know, she thought that humans should be free to live with the things that we take for granted, the human dignity, being able to raise your family, seeing an end to the violence. And I thought it was very interesting, and they included this in the piece, and we will be including it too. There's a little video of her that was shot when she was in fifth grade. It's a poem that she wrote about her dream and her vision of ending world hunger by the year 2000. You know, again, it was very naive, but it's got that child's wisdom behind it that recognizes that that's just a huge injustice that so many children are starving in the world. So I think that she could have gone to any hot topic area or hot issue, and she would have had the same fight. So when we decided to do the play, and what I'm trying to do with it is really show this young spirit who wanted to speak out and travel and get involved. And you know, ironically, quite literally, she put herself on the line for this cause that she believed in. Who is it, the right cause? That depends on everyone's point of view. That's not the judgment, I think, that we're putting on it. I think it's that she wanted to engage others and find meaning in her life. She keeps talking about finding meaning in her life through her writing and through her observations. So that's what really struck me about it, and that's what we're trying to present with it.
Well, I wondered also if you had seen previous productions before you accepted the job and how your approach either stayed similar to those approaches or changed from previous productions.
You know, I have not seen any other productions of it. Like I said, I was living in New York when that production was pulled, and I remember just kind of peripherally reading about it.
Right.
Nor had I done any research on her. Obviously, when I got the script, I started doing research, and there's a myriad of information out on the internet. And again, it's all the points of view are all depending upon who's writing the information. There's people that believe that these young activists were used as dupes, really, by the Palestinians. And, of course, the world changed after Hamas was elected. But this happened in 2003, March 16th. She died in 2003. So I didn't have any other point of entry into it. I had not seen it before. I didn't have any other notions. When I read it, her writing is very intriguing. It's very... it's insightful, I think, and I think it would have been interesting to see how she evolved as a writer had she lived. But I didn't see the piece itself as threatening. Obviously, the issues that it surrounds and the fact that she was in Palestine, you know, brings up a lot of heat, and that's therein lies the controversy. But the writing itself was very sensitive, very insightful, very sad, actually. And it's interesting, you know, I don't know why Alan Rickman and Catherine Biner selected the pieces that they did. I mean, I think that they tried to string a narrative together, but they're very disjointed, and so that's been the challenge for us, is to really find what's the storyline through this. How do you carve a plot out of something that really isn't there? But many compelling journals, entries, emails, poems I found of hers that were not included in this version. So why they selected what they selected, you know, I don't know. So I feel like we've had a pretty fresh eye looking at it and exploring it because we didn't have any preconceived notions about it. But then again, I think that's the strength of the piece, that she is a person who says, look, I'm only beginning to learn about this issue myself. I'm not fully educated, but I feel this passion. I feel this need to go. She keeps saying, I have to go. And then, of course, she gets more and more involved in the cause once she's there. But to me, that, again, that's what's noble. You know, I don't know that I would have been so brave to be able to pick up and go and do what she did.
That's very, very rich territory for a drama.
Right, it really is. And you know, and I think that we've been very aware of the controversy. Our organization has reached out to a lot of different organizations in the Jewish community, the American Federation, and so forth. And we really want to have a forum where there's a post-show discussion. And when I did read it, I said that. I said, look, this isn't, you know, it's not Merchant of Venice. I mean, there's a great play that we can only speculate what the Elizabethan audiences felt about that play. But you look
right at
it, and he was writing in a highly anti-Semitic Elizabethan England. He undeniably put a human face on the character of Shylock when he talks about his marriage, when he talks about the heartbreak of his child leaving him, certainly when he's forced to change his religion. He's got the famous Hef Not a Jew Eyes speech. Certainly post-World War II, you can't see it any other way. But it's interesting. Did that create a lot of controversy in Elizabethan audiences? You know, Shakespeare, I think, was constantly pushing the envelope of what he wrote, and he was getting real close to these hot topic issues of his generation in a time of extreme censorship, which kind of blows me away. And the resonances of the play, you know, deepen and deepen as the play is over, and, you know, thus it goes on for 400-some years. This play isn't that by any means. She doesn't have that ability to carve a story out in that way. But I still think, nonetheless, when I read it, I thought, okay, then we need to make an educational format around this. We need to tell this story as simply as possible and then invite people from all different viewpoints to come and share. And if we can do that and raise consciousness and, you know, find our shared humanity in opposing viewpoints and have a dialogue, then to me that's the best we can hope for. So I'm looking forward to having these moderated discussions that give people a chance to put out other points of view and really to educate us all.
Well, that sounds fantastic, and I'm sure that audiences will respond to that. So thank you so much. We have only a brief time to speak today, unfortunately, but thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much, Allison.
My name is Rachel Corey, star Samara Frame, and we'll have four performances on September 1st, 8th, 15th, and 22nd at 8 p.m., at Theatricum Botanicum in Topanga, followed by a moderated audience talkback. For more information about tickets, call 310-455-3723 or go to www.theatricum.com. For more information about LAFPI's resources, activities, and opportunities, please visit www.lafpi.com.